Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome and thank you for visiting Booth 61. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. We have a very exciting show for you today, and I have personally enjoyed meeting my guest for lunch today and just fascinated with the entire subject matter. It's going to be a lot of fun. But first, I want to take a brief moment to introduce our producer, a fellow that's become a good friend of mine over the last 20, 25 weeks, Mr. Kevin Finn. Kevin's the master at the control board, but he also hosts a number of shows on Business Radio X, and just a fine individual. And I missed you last week, Kevin. We had somebody else on the board because you were vacationing. How was it?
I was out playing golf and playing tennis all week. It was an absolute blast.
And you were in Carolina?
South Carolina, that's right.
Well, it's good to have you back. Thank you very much.
I'm glad to be back. I missed you, Ricky. I thought about calling in.
Well, we'd love to have you. We had a great show last week. We had a lot of fun. And we'll have a lot of fun today. If at some point during the show something sparks your interest, just jump in and ask a question.
I'd
love to have your input. All right, I'm very excited about today's show, as I said earlier. As most of you know, our goal for Booth 61 is to build community and allow the rising tide to lift all the boats. Maybe all the votes as well, but certainly all the boats. A problem that I had from time to time as an entrepreneur in my earlier career was raising capital. And with a lot of sweat and help from other people, I was fortunate enough to be able to raise money on a couple of different occasions with Reg D offerings through accredited investors. And I had a lot of help in doing that. But a lot of people are not as fortunate to have family and friends that can pony up like that. And many people are looking for money today. Many of you are very familiar with the term crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, and that's kind of where we're going to be talking about today, the newer buzzwords. Many of you have probably heard or even maybe invested in Kickstarter ideas. One of my children has invested in a couple of bands that were coming out with CDs and this, that, and the other. But today we are very fortunate to have a pioneer in this field to give us the lowdown on what is really happening, how to perhaps get involved, and what are the risk factors for companies and for the investors as well. Mr. David Lilienfeld is a practicing attorney here in Atlanta who is the founder of Sterling Funder. Welcome to Booth 61, David.
Ricky, thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're very glad, and we have a very good mutual friend, Miss Caroline Hubbard Wilbert, who's one of the PR mavens of the city, and I was very thrilled that she took the time to introduce the two of us, and very excited about having you here.
We're grateful to have her. We're grateful for everything. Let me thank you, too. I know you've done a lot for the tech community here in Atlanta. You've done it for years. You're still at it. We're grateful for everything you've done to kind of bring us together, so thank you for that.
Well, just longevity and having a lot of fun and trying to stay relevant as much as possible. But you grew up in New York City, and now you're in the big city of Atlanta. What was growing up in New York like before sexting?
New York City. Well, it was a blast to grow up there. It was an adventure every block. It was the kind of place where you don't really need to do anything. You just go for a walk and you kind of find stuff. Things find you. So it was a lot of fun. I went to high school, grew up there, went to high school there, was having so much fun. I stayed there for college, went to Hunter College, which is on 63rd Street and Lexington Avenue, and stayed there and just enjoyed it. At some point decided I wanted to see the rest of the country and see some other things. I moved out of New York and after I graduated from college.
And then you went to Ohio State, I believe?
I did. I joined the Buckeye Nation, and I visited a whole bunch of different law schools here on the East Coast, and Ohio State was just a good place for me. I had family in Cleveland, and the school was great. People were warm, and Columbus turned out to be a great choice for me.
Well, it's a great school, and a lot of Buckeyes certainly here in the Atlanta area. I believe that Bill Van Curen, who's a CIO out at NCR, is another Ohio State grad. How did you get to Atlanta, Georgia?
Well, I mean, that's a credit to the city. I mean, the fact that there's so many Buckeyes here is a credit to Atlanta. I had friends here. I really had come to visit them several times, enjoyed it. It was in sort of the period of my life when all those wonderful establishments in Buckhead were open and filled, and we just had a blast, and there was just a lot of business going on in Atlanta. There was good business opportunities. It was enjoyable, and I just really fell in love with Atlanta, fell in love with Buckhead and what it had to offer, and it became clear to me that it was a better option than going back to the New York or Columbus, Ohio.
And you started out with a firm of a number of partners and worked your way up, and I think you were twice voted one of the super rising stars in the field of attorneys in the Georgia area from, I think it was 2010 and 11, if I recall, 2% of all attorneys, so that's pretty prestigious.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I've enjoyed practicing law. I'm still practicing today. I'm fortunate to have some really good mentors here in Atlanta. And enjoy litigating cases. I enjoy the judges here and enjoy kind of being part of that justice system. And it kind of led me to my entrepreneurial kind of needs, got me to my own law firm in 2005 is when I started my own law firm. And that's where I practice now.
And from an entrepreneurial bent, you probably saw a lot of companies that needed funding, were trying to find funding, and so you got involved in the whole funding space, and that's kind of what we're going to concentrate on for the next 30, 40 minutes.
Sure.
Probably a good portion of our listeners are familiar with Kickstarter. As I mentioned, my son is invested in some opportunities there, and I've looked at a couple myself, but why don't you tell me a little bit about Kickstarter for those that aren't familiar with it, and how is that different from the equity crowdfunding that that you're doing through Sterling?
Kickstarter is great. I mean, I can mention, too, that part of what I did as an entrepreneur about 10 years ago, I had my own patents, and this kind of is relevant to this issue of raising capital, and I had patents on a piece of computer hardware and wasn't able to raise capital for that business because there really wasn't much capital for computer hardware here in Atlanta, and I wound up selling those patents. I kind of had that firsthand experience of trying to raise capital for a business. And although it turned out fine for me, I know it's still a struggle for a lot of entrepreneurs. And Kickstarter is one option. Kickstarter is what we call reward-based crowdfunding. So companies that want to raise money will go on Kickstarter. They will sort of highlight their goods, their whatever product or service they're providing. And they have a page on Kickstarter, and they solicit money, and they can get funding that way. And what happens on Kickstarter is the people who give the money to these companies typically get a reward. So that'll be – and that reward tends to be whatever the company is making. So if it's a band, like your son has supported some bands on Kickstarter, and so he'll get – a CD, or he'll get a shirt, or he'll get some other things that the band has to offer. So that's what we call reward-based crowdfunding. Kickstarter's been great. Kickstarter really has brought the term crowdfunding into the kind of U.S. vernacular.
So they really kind of broke the ice, and now we're looking at something a little different in equity crowdfunding.
We are. I mean, Kickstarter really laid the groundwork for – and I think it sort of proved the model. It proved the crowdfunding model, and that sort of has matured into what we call equity crowdfunding, which is companies raising money not by giving out their products, but by selling shares, by selling equity in the company. So it's a whole new experience for the entire country.
Very new, because laws are just being passed and regulations are just now being created, and Georgia's third state in the country to really begin getting deep into this?
They are. Georgia's really led the charge. In April of 2012, President Obama signed the Jobs Act. So that was the federal law that is enabling equity crowdfunding. But that has not been – that Jobs Act has not been implemented by the SEC yet. So because we don't have the federal rules in place yet, a lot of the attention in crowdfunding has turned to the states.
Okay.
And Georgia and Kansas were the first two states to allow equity crowdfunding. So I'm really appreciative of what the folks here in Georgia have done. The Secretary of State Kemp and his staff have really been very progressive with the rules that they've developed to help lay the groundwork for equity crowdfunding. So not every state has the benefit of this. This is new, and even Georgia, it's very new, and it hasn't been used a lot, and we're really helping to giving folks a marketplace for equity crowdfunding because there hasn't been one yet.
Well, give me an example of who are the kind of people who should really care about equity crowdfunding.
Well, there's really two groups. Number one is the companies that need to raise capital, and mm-hmm. there's a number of different reasons why they'd want to raise capital this way. Some of them can't raise money, can't raise capital traditional way. Others feel like this is quicker, this is more efficient for them. So certainly entrepreneurs that want to raise money for new businesses should care, and companies that need capital to grow. So the entrepreneurs and businesses should care. The other side of it is really interesting is the investors, and this is bringing a whole new class of investments, making a whole new type of investments available to investors who before were limited. It was difficult for most investors to access early-stage companies. And early-stage companies tend to be the equities that have the highest return. I mean, they have the highest risk, but they also have the highest return. And because that's where the highest returns are, the concept was that investors should have access to them. You shouldn't have to be in the top 1% of wealth in this country in order to be able to access these types of investments.
Well, since you're at the forefront of this and really a pioneer, if you will, tell us a little bit about Sterling Funder's objective and purpose, kind of the overarching, and dig in as much detail as you can because I'm sure the audience will be very interested in this.
Sure. I mean, our goal and what we do is create a marketplace. So we are a place where entrepreneurs looking to raise capital can find investors. We're a place where investors can find entrepreneurs that are growing companies. So that's what we really are making the market. We're finding a way. We provide a way where they can find each other. That's really, at its very essence, that's what Sterling Funder does. I mean, our mission really is, kind of our mission statement if we obsess over customers and we invent for customers, then capital will flow and these customers will grow. And I know that's kind of that's our mission statement. It's kind of a lot of it is packed in there. I can go through the bits and pieces if you'd like and kind of break it down a little bit. But that's the mission statement, and that's what we're trying to accomplish.
So make sure I got that right. Obsess, invent, flow, and grow.
You got it.
I like that.
That's got
a good ring to it.
Good. Yeah, I mean, obsessing over customers. Let me explain a little bit. Obsessing over customers to me is critical to our business. I mean, you've got to give customers a great experience. You've got to give them the information they need. You've got to be successful for them. So that's really priority number one. Invent for customers is a lot of times they won't necessarily know what should be on our site. We need to figure out what's going to serve them well. We need to figure out what will help them, kind of achieve their mission. The other thing is in terms of inventing for our customers, as you've mentioned, I mean, we don't really have a model. We're really new. We're the first one to be doing this. So we don't have other companies that we can go out and look at and see what they're doing. So we're really having to invent a website that we know will serve the customer well, and that's like a daily exercise. What can we add to our site that's going to help our customers? And the flow and grow part is kind of my favorite part. And that's if we're making a market, investors are meeting entrepreneurs, then capital will start flowing between them. And once capital flows, then you'll see growth. The companies will have their own growth, and the other growth will be the investors. The investors' portfolio will grow. So when we're achieving that mission, I know that we're doing what we should be doing, and I know we'll be successful once we've got that kind of churning.
Well, over a period of time, once you get a couple of success stories, and those stories get told and repeated and told and repeated, you'll have a wealth and depth of individuals that want to get involved. And not every company is going to be successful as it is in Wall Street or Main Street or anywhere else. But I guess a lot of people will probably be wondering, how will investing through crowdfunding be made to be as safe as possible? And, you're not really going to be doing some deep due diligence on these companies. It's really the crowd's responsibility, the way I understand it. Is that close to correct?
Yeah, that is correct. There's a fine line, between what we do in terms of due diligence and vetting versus verifying facts. And our job is to verify the facts that are in the company's application, verify the facts that they've provided, and make sure those facts are accurate. But one of the great things about crowdfunding is it's really the collective intelligence of the crowd that should decide the merits of an investment. And we're making sure the way we've set up our business is we make sure we're not interfering with that. We're giving the crowd the information that they need to make that decision. And importantly, they don't make that decision alone. They make that decision together. The other safeguard for crowdfunding is the regulatory environment. There'll be SEC oversight, and there'll be SEC rules that will be implemented, and what they're focusing on is exactly that. How do we make sure crowdfunding is safe, a safe investment? And so I think it's great because you'll have the government oversight, and you have the private sector very motivated to make sure crowdfunding is safe.
Go a little bit deeper for me, if you would. When we talk about someone investing and wanting to know more about the company or what somebody feels about a deal, right now you've got to really do a lot of homework. Aren't you making it easier so that people that are looking at a potential deal can communicate with one another without a great deal of jumping through hoops, that you facilitate that yourself?
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the things that we do on our site is we have what we call an issuer application. And what this does is this requires the companies to fill out the form so that the information will be presented to our investors in a uniform manner. In other words, they don't have to look at different formats for every company. Okay. So every company that they review, the information will be presented to them in a uniform way. So they have to learn one format. And that also makes it easier for them to compare companies side by side. So we are making that process simpler. We're making sure they before a company will go on our site, we make sure that the information is complete. So the investor doesn't see anything unless there's a complete package and a uniform package. So that's going back to obsessing over our customers. That's one of the things that we need to do, is make it easy for them, present the information in an easy way so they can really focus on they're doing their part, which is making the judgment as to whether or not this is a good investment. So we facilitate it, but the decision is ultimately the investors and the crowds.
Mm-hmm. In most new industries or new lines of work or business or whatever the case might be, it takes a while to get a good group of people together and have a need for an association. Technology Association of Georgia was a conglomerate of Women in Technology and Southeastern Software and Business Technology Alliance that all started over many, many years and finally came together. But I understand there's already, in these early days, a Georgia Crowdfunding Association. What is that all about? And I would assume you've got to be one of the senior level people in it, since you're basically starting the industry.
Sure. There is a need for it. I am proud to be one of the founding members. There's about six of us. And Gene Wright has really led that effort. There is a need for it because crowdfunding is coming. I mean, the amount of attention that crowdfunding is getting is pretty significant. It's not even something that's allowed yet, yet there's a lot of conversation. There's a lot of interest in crowdfunding. And it was important for us to start the association at the beginning of the process because the Georgia Crowdfunding Association has two missions. Number one is education, and number two is regulation, making sure that it's done safe and making sure the public is educated on it and understands all that needs to be done. So we felt like it was important for us to get out early and help kind of control and be involved in the crowdfunding conversation in Georgia at the beginning, as opposed to trying to sort of catch up behind some others. So we're doing a lot. There's numerous events planned, mainly educational events, because crowdfunding is new. It's new in Georgia. It's new nationally. So we're planning events to help educate investors, let them understand the risk, understand what they need to do to be successful, and then educational programs to educate the entrepreneurs so that they know, give them the best chance at raising capital this way. So I think there is an immediate need for the association, and it's been well received. And we are very busy planning events and getting out into the community to educate folks.
Is there already a website for the Georgia Crowdfunding Association?
There is. It's GeorgiaCrowdfundingAssociation.com, GeorgiaCrowdfundingAssociation.com, and there is a website, and there's information that's being added to it every day. It'll be content-rich, and it'll be a place for folks to go who don't have a lot of information on crowdfunding. Hopefully, it'll be a kind of the first stop for them to get educated on it. Mm-hmm.
We touched on this a little bit earlier as far as the laws in Georgia being, you know, really at the forefront, but maybe go into that a little deeper. What really does make Georgia so special in the crowdfunding space right now?
What Secretary of State Kemp did was what we call removing the ban against general solicitation. So what that means is companies that are looking to raise capital can do it publicly. In the past, they needed to raise that capital through their networks, through friends and family round. Mm-hmm. And by lifting the ban against general solicitation, the state of Georgia has permitted companies that want to raise capital to let that be publicly known. It doesn't have to be a private matter anymore. It can be a public matter, and once you lift that ban, the number of people that are going to be interested in investing in you in your company is going to increase. So that's really the heart of it. And lifting the ban against general solicitation to allow equity crowdfunding in Georgia was really only one step that the state has taken to help facilitate capital raise here in Georgia. So they've taken other steps like the Georgia Angel Investor Tax Credit is a significant step. The state is also, the Georgia legislature has passed a statute to allow the state to have its own investment fund to invest in early stage companies. So once that fund is fully is funded through the budget, then the state of Georgia will have capital that they can invest in these startup companies. So the state, really, maybe more than any other state in the country, is the state of Georgia is being really ambitious and aggressive in terms of helping these companies get the capital they need so they can grow, and not only grow but stay. I mean, a big part of it is getting them to stay here in Georgia once they get to that sort of size where they can have, they're taking up significant office space and they've got employees. We want to keep them here. We don't want to see them go. So the state has really been really aggressive with what they've done. And I'm really applaud them for what they've done to help the technology community.
It's so exciting. As someone who was born in Crawford Long Hospital, downtown Atlanta, Georgia, a long time ago, sometimes people poke fun at Georgia and the South as being backwards and this, that, and the other. And those of us who have been around a long time know it's not exactly true. But here's a situation where the state is going above and beyond, being really proactive and setting the standards across the country for this. And I think that's quite exciting. And I heard Secretary Brian Kemp speak maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago in Athens, and he touched on this and a lot of other things during that process. But it is real exciting for the state.
Yep. I'm involved with a number of national crowdfunding associations, and I have been fielding in the last 2 to 3 months a lot of inquiries about what's going on here in Georgia. So the whole country is noticing the progress Georgia's making, and they're now acknowledging that Georgia is on the forefront. So what I'm happy for is that it's not only do we have it here in Georgia, but the whole country is watching. The whole country is recognizing what Georgia has done, and we're really Sterling Funder, as well as the Georgia Crowdfunding Association, is have an opportunity to really be under the microscope, which we welcome. I mean, we want to kind of be that pioneer. We want to be the trailblazers, and we want to make sure it's done correctly.
Hopefully you'll get a great first mover advantage and be one of the most successful ones of all, and we all hope that to be the case.
Thank you.
You mentioned the Jobs Act a little earlier that President Obama and I guess Congress got through. What does the SEC need to do before the Jobs Act actually becomes a reality and you're able to really go out in a more aggressive way? What's left?
The SEC needs to pass the rules to implement the Jobs Act. SEC has been sort of widely criticized for having missed the original deadline. My perspective is that they've got a really hard job. My perspective is I hope that they take their time, they do it right. This is a completely new way to raise capital. It's understandable to me that they're taking time. They don't have a lot of other models.
Precedents.
Yeah, there's not a lot of precedents for this. So this is new, it's challenging, it's exciting, and I'm grateful they're taking their time because that makes me think that the more deliberations, probably the better. And the better the rules will be. But I also understand that the rules are largely written at this point, that they are being refined, and the expectation by many of us is that the rules will be out by the end of September, which will be end of September this year. And then there'll be some what we call comment period. So they'll publish the rules, and then they'll give the opportunity to the public to comment on it, and then final rules will come out hopefully at the end of 2013, and then we'll be good to go early part of 2014.
So the next 3 to 4 months, a lot is going to happen, and then hopefully you hit the ground running a little faster in 2014, January.
That's the expected timeline, yep.
Well, you're, of course, in this equation, you've got to find great companies or there's nothing to invest in. And if you don't find investors, there's no reason for the great companies to come around. So you're courting both of those camps, if you will. What is the biggest challenge that you face in winning over each of these groups? And you can start with the investors first and then move into the companies.
Sure. The investors, I mean, we've got to show them, we've got to gain their confidence. We've got to, this is new, it's a new class of investments for them. So our job is to convince them that this can be done safely, that they can achieve a good return on their investment, and you know, when you're dealing with people's money, they, as they should be, are very, very careful, which is what we want them to be. But so that's a challenge to get people to invest in something new and different will be our biggest challenge. On the company side, is there's been, unfortunately, somewhat of a misconception that if I want to raise money, I need to put a video on and put a video on a website and kind of press go and money will flow in. And that's really not the case. Equity crowdfunding is a serious business. You should not, we need to explain to companies and make them understand that if you cannot raise money offline, you're probably not going to be able to raise money online. You need to have a significant business plan and a good management team. You need all those components that you need offline. you would need online in order to get investments. So we're spending a lot of time with these companies, helping them get a full, well-rounded pitch prepared, so that when they go online, that's, you know, people, investors will look at them and say, now that's the kind of company that I want to invest in. That's the kind of CEO that I trust, because look at the work that he's done. Look how well planned out that business is. So it's our job to help get these companies to that point. And while we've had a tremendous amount of interest in equity crowdfunding, not all the companies are to that stage yet. So it's a big challenge for us to help these companies get to that point.
What is it going to take to get it to the next level for crowdfunding to really be mainstream? Certainly the laws and getting the rules and regulations in place, and then letting you begin to do the publicity and the marketing that you'd like to be doing yesterday. But what are the steps that you think it's going to take to really get it to be in the mainstream, where anybody's thinking, you know, I got a couple extra $1,000. I'd like to take a gander. I'm not going to buy, you know, 12 shares of Coca-Cola or IBM or something that I know will have probably a great return over a longer period of time, but I really want to take a chance on something that might be a great hit, or, you know, I might walk away without anything, but have had some fun learning about a new company. Where do you see we are in the process?
Well, Ricky, I think you'd be the perfect investor, so I'm hoping to have you sign up for that soon. But that's the right attitude, really, is I'm not, you know, we don't want people to look at crowdfunding investors and say, well, this is where I'm going to put my life savings in, and my life savings is going to multiply by 20, and I'm going to be wealthy. That's not what we want. So we want cautious, thoughtful investors. We want folks that understand that it would be appropriate to have some percentage of their investment portfolio in high-risk investments. That makes sense. So that's kind of investor that we want. But I think for it to go mainstream, for it to be the kind of thing that's routine for people to put money into, we need to have successes. And that's why we're working really every day to get to that point where we've got companies that are qualified, we've got CEOs that really warrant capital. And once you get some successes up and there's money returned to the investors, I think that will really help get crowdfunding mainstream. But we need those successes to happen, and we're working really hard to make sure they do.
Well, a couple of great success stories, and it's going to be, you know, Katie bar the door. But how do you warn, or how do you try to make sure that you don't get someone who, for whatever reason, thinks, I'm taking, you know, I've got $5,000 to my name, and I haven't made the house payment in the last 2 years, but I'm going to put this $5,000 in something. I know that probably a better investment to them would be lottery tickets for Saturday night, because at least it'll be over fast.
Yeah.
They won't have to sweat quite so long. But how do you qualify those investors, or try to make sure someone doesn't do something that a normal person would think, well, that's idiotic, but
sure,
you know, there are some folks that maybe aren't quite as sophisticated financially and might think that makes good sense.
Yep. Yeah, well, we're not Vegas. There's no craps table. There's no blackjack table. So that's not the idea at all. And really, the rules that we mentioned that the SEC is working on will help prevent that. Within the Jobs Act, there's also a limit on the amount of money people can invest through crowdfunding. So I think that's really the number one safeguard to prevent that. Most people will be, depending on your income, most of the country will be capped at $2,000 is the most they'll be able to invest through crowdfunding. And that's already in the Jobs Act, and that will be implemented in the SEC rules. So I think one of the biggest safeguard is just limit by law the amount of money they can invest. That's number one. And number two is something that we're working on, again, every day. It's investor education. We have on Sterling Funder, we have a extensive what we call Learning Hub. And on our Learning Hub, we have wealth of information for entrepreneurs, but also for investors. We need them to be educated. And on our site is where they can find a lot of information about how to responsibly invest through crowdfunding.
I'm fascinated, and I actually started filling out my profile the other day, and phone rang or something came up, but I promise you I am going to be a participant. And I've seen Kevin Finn nodding his head a lot, so I think Kevin Finn, our producer, is going to be an investor as well. Again, you're in the very early stages, but so far of the first four or five companies you've had online, if you will, you haven't closed a round of funding for a company yet. What has been the biggest obstacle to that so far?
I think the biggest obstacle is getting investors comfortable with crowdfunding. That, like I said, it's new. It has not hit – crowdfunding really has not hit the Main Street vernacular yet. There's an education process involved, and I think that's really the big obstacle for us. The other one is making sure that we have we want to have a lot of companies on our site. And what that will do is that will mean that investors will come on and they're more likely to see a company that they understand and their story resonates with that investor and they're more likely to invest. So we've got to get more companies ready to pitch online so that when investors log on, they have more options. Part of crowdfunding too is, and one of my hopes is investors gravitate towards investments they understand. So if it's a, for example, a beverage company, hopefully we'll have folks from beverage experience, and they'll gravitate towards that. So I think investing in these companies is going to be a very personal process for the investors. So they'll want to see a business that they understand, or they'll want to see a CEO that they can really relate to. And so we've got to really build that connection between the investors and the companies. You need some volume. You need some mass. So I think getting more companies up will mean more investors can find that appeal that they need to really make that final investment decision.
Having worked at PricewaterhouseCoopers and worked around and tried to help a lot of companies raise money over the years, the big concern or the big desire everyone had was not raising money, but raising smart money. You know, somebody writes you a check for $1 million, that's sensational. But somebody writes you a check for $1 million who also has industry expertise and maybe contacts to whoever your customer base is going to be, you'd rather have $500,000 for them and give them twice as much of the company. Is there going to be a way for that to happen in your model? So if, you know, I can't think of a good example, but if there was something to do with food, because I enjoy eating out on a regular basis, if there was a restaurant that wanted to raise an X number of dollars and I would throw $1,000 in, would there be a way I could interchange with them or give them ideas, whether it be for a menu item or a specialty promotion? Is that something that you're going to be facilitating as well?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, that is a good point, and that's really, again, that's part of the concept behind crowdfunding is that companies are going out and they're getting capital, but they're also getting what we call advocates. So if you've got a crowdfunding campaign and you've raised capital from, let's say, 50 different people, you've got their capital infusion, but you also have advocates. You've got 50 more advocates for your business, and they will tell their friends, and they will push it out on their social network. So you've kind of got a quasi-sales team. Similarly, I think more to your point is, out of those 50 investors, you may have a few that have that industry expertise or have connections. The expectation is, and what I would love to see is some investors through crowdfunding wind up with a board seat on these companies because they've got the kind of knowledge or expertise that you're talking about. They've got that smart money, and so I think that's something that we need to make sure those folks find each other, the companies along with the investors that have that specialized knowledge, the connections, the industry experience. I think that's definitely one of the things that crowdfunding, one of the advantages of crowdfunding has over more traditional capital raises.
Well, certainly for a retail business, you know, having 50 people or whatever the number would be, I've got to believe that if I'm going out to dinner, it's going to be at that restaurant. And if I have a friend that goes out to dinner and tells me they didn't go there, they will not be a friend any longer. Might not work in software or maybe some other services type situations, but I would think for retail that would be golden.
I think that's important, the advocacy part of crowdfunding, and not only word of mouth, but just the social networks as well. But even in the high level, like you mentioned software, Ricky, and I mean, I think that it'll maybe happen less frequently, but even in a business like that, it's certainly possible that an investor through crowdfunding in that company will have some strategic relationship or partnership that will be useful to the company. So even in software, no matter what the industry, there's always the sort of the concept of crowdfunding is that the investors will find ways to help, in addition to money, find ways to help the companies that they've invested in.
I like that a lot. What crowdfunding portals in other parts of the country are you watching and maybe trying to model after? Or more than likely, I would be thinking that more of them are watching you and trying to model you than them. But what is making Sterling Funder a little more unique than perhaps some of the others?
Well, we don't have – there's not necessarily a lot of competition. There's no other crowdfunding portal here in Georgia, and there's not one in Kansas, which is the other state crowdfunding is legal. So we don't have a lot to really look at, which I think is a good thing. I mean, it's forced us to be unique. As a company, we obsess over customers. We don't obsess over competition. And certainly we have. I will say when we have sort of looked to other crowdfunding portals, we've looked to the reward-based type companies because they've been doing it for a while. So no one's been doing equity crowdfunding, but other companies have been doing reward-based crowdfunding. So we've been able to benefit by kind of learning from them and understanding their statistics and analytics.
So you're really in the, infancy of this whole industry. Crystal ball for me a little bit. What will crowdfunding look like in 5 years?
Crowdfunding in 5 years will be, it'll be something that everybody understands. They know what it is. It won't be me having to, or me, sort of explaining crowdfunding. It'll be kind of in everyone's vernacular. And it'll be successful. There'll be a good track record of companies successfully raising money this way, not only raising the money this way, but in 5 years, I'm sure we will have companies that have gone through that whole cycle of and had a successful exit. And better than I would, exit kind of as a benefit for the investors and everyone involved. So I think we'll have a track record then of successfully crowdfunded companies that will really help be the model for the industry. But my expectation is everybody will know what crowdfunding is, and people will not be afraid to kind of dive in and get involved. Their neighbors did it, their brother did it, and they're ready to go try something new.
Something that I have probably had 17,412 conversations about in the last 12, 13 years. And we haven't ever come to a conclusion, by the way, but I'm going to ask you for the conclusion. Georgia gets a bad reputation from time to time for not having enough VC or angel investment. And I think there's two sides to look at that coin, depending on what time of the day it is. First, do you think that's true? And if so, what does it mean for Sterling Funder, and how will you be part of helping that? I mean, again, I'm not going to get on a long tirade because people don't listen to the show to listen to me. They want to listen to a smart guest that I'm fortunate enough to have today. But I think with what Tom Noonan and David Cummings and others have done, where great, smart people are regenerating and helping companies get off the ground, is a step in the right direction that we didn't see 6 years ago, 5 years ago. But we still aren't anywhere close to Austin or Silicon Valley or maybe even Research Triangle. So, again, I think we're growing, but there's still a dearth of capital, if you will. So how does that fit into Sterling?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Georgia's marching up that list, and I think it's got a lot of potential to continue to knock off some of those places that you mentioned. But I think in terms of VC, that Money Tree report, there was a new one for a company I know you're familiar with, PricewaterhouseCoopers, that just came out that said Georgia companies had in the first 6 months of 2013 had more VC investments than all of 2012. So I think we're in a good cycle there. And angel investment, I think, is still a challenge in Atlanta. And that I don't really know the solution to that other than really having more companies that are ready for for angel investments. So I think Sterling Funder fits in, I think, by being an earlier stage. I don't necessarily – I don't see us as competing with venture capitalists or angel investors. I think Sterling Funder really – companies like that will have – we will be setting up for that next round of funding for professional investors. So under the Jobs Act, let me mention there's $1 million limit per year on what a company can raise.
Oh.
So you've got this $1 million limit. And so really that puts us in a position of – Getting these companies that first kind of seed round, and then setting them up for success, and setting them up for a second round of investment from an angel investor or a venture capitalist. So I think we're really just part of the ecosystem. There's really a lot of harmony between what Sterling Funder is doing and what VCs and angel investors look for in terms of an investment.
So this is kind of the family and friends round, with a great deal of expansion because of the internet, that what we couldn't do before because you just didn't have enough hours in the day, you're able to accomplish with the power of the internet and being able to hit this many eyeballs at one time.
Yep, well said, yep.
Tell us about some of the companies that you're currently working with today.
We've got a great array. I'm actually not allowed to promote particular companies because of securities laws. But
Sterlingfunder.com, and you can find them at yourself.
You got that. Exactly. That's what I was going to say next. But, yeah, they're on our site, and there's many more to come. And what I think is great about it is once we have our companies get more companies up, there will be a company for everyone. I mean, everybody will find a company on our site that they can relate to, that they can understand, and they can kind of feel trusting to invest in. So the companies are coming, but there's definitely early on, I think there'll be a significant amount of technology companies, software companies that will be on our site because there's a big need. Georgia, Atlanta is a great place for those kind of companies to grow, and there's a lot of them coming. So I think that there'll be definitely an early tilt on that, but there'll be brick and mortar companies, there'll be technology companies, there'll be professional services. There'll be all kinds of companies that'll be on the site.
And probably more Georgia focus to begin with?
I think so. I mean, we have the Invest Georgia exemption here, and that's really driven a lot of our early interest in Sterling Funder. So about, I would say, yeah, there'll be a good bit of them will be Georgia-based, which I think is great. I think the crowdfunding has a good it's really good for local interest. People want to invest in companies that they can visit, pay, you know, and go to. So I think early on there will be a lot of Georgia twang.
David, you know, I just looked at the clock and I cannot realize that 47 minutes have gone by this quickly. We might have to make this a part two because I think it's fascinating and I want to know more about it myself personally and I want to share it with others. But what are the sectors that you're watching for the next round of innovation as we begin to wrap up? And really, where do you think maybe perhaps Atlanta's really next hot company will come from? What segment or sector?
I mean, it's just so hard to be singular about it. I think that every, you know, obviously the technology companies here in Atlanta are really strong. They're really exciting. There's a lot of them. And you know, I'd be shocked if a big one didn't come out of Atlanta in the next year or two. So I'm really excited about the technology sector, and I'm really excited about software. I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of talent here in Atlanta. There's great incubators here in Atlanta, and I think that there's just a lot of potential. So I mean, I'm expecting, but again, I'm not expecting there to be any kind of singular kind of big winner. I'm expecting there to be a lot of successes across the board, and that's kind of how we approach our business. We're not focusing on a sector. We're kind of looking at it as let's get best in class, really good companies in all these sectors and watch them all succeed.
Well, I wish you well. I believe you're going to be successful, and I look forward to hopefully being a part of a few of them along the way. If I want to find out more about Sterling Funder, David, how would I go about that?
We've got a website at sterlingfunder.com. That's sterlingfunder.com. You can also feel free to email me. My email address is david sterlingfunder.com. I'm happy to answer questions.
I was going to ask you that next. How do we personally get a hold of you?
Yep, that's the way. David@sterlingfunder.com.
Well, David, it has been a pleasure having you in Booth 61 today. Thank you very much for taking your time.
Ricky, thank you very much for having me, and thank you again for what you've done for the community.
Well, I think this is going to be a great addition to our community, and I think you're going to be a big someone that people write down your name today because they're going to be hearing it a lot more in the not-too-distant future.
Appreciate it, Ricky.
This is Ricky Steele, and I've finished my cup of coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday or by listening to any of our past shows at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele on Business Radio X. I try to always close our time together by sharing a blessing, hopefully for you, your family, and perhaps your business. The blessing comes from the book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for dropping by, and I hope you'll join us next week for a fresh cup in Booth 61.